there wasn't anything doing. We would stay there and watch there, and some of the kids would holler out to them. But the first time I didn't go with them. There was spice, you know, they were hit with an umbrella, and it was like extra anyway. So after that I said, I don't, to myself, I don't go anymore. I would stand at the door and say, well, let's go, I let them all go out. They said, I stayed back.
Well, how were you supporting yourself at this time? You weren't working then.
I had some friends there that I used to stay overnight with them. And I don't remember, I had breakfast and evening meal and I go back in the hall for the day. Uh-huh. As a matter of fact, there's a couple of, I remember telling you about this young girl, Pearl Medeiros. She was 17 when she came. She and her grandmother came to this Venus Radio convention. This youngster was a pearl button maker. She was a worker, working at, you know, they make pearl, what do you call it, pearl mother buttons?
Oh, Mother of Pearl?
Mother of Pearl buttons, uh-huh. Yeah. And she was very vivid, very beautiful looking girl. And of course, they made much of her. She and her grandmother and her mother, I guess, there's three generations came to that conference. It was outstanding. Then, I don't know how it happened, of course, I never did follow details, but she got acquainted with this cigar maker organizer. And they both started working for the Lawrence Strike. And because I liked her, when I heard her name and saw her name, of course I would, nothing would do, but I have to go to attend that meeting. And the meetings were on the outside, any street corner, and on the courthouse square. You didn't need a permit, anyone could speak. So I used to go to their meetings, and I adored both of them. So that's how I got acquainted more or less with the Lawrence Troubles.
You never went up to Lawrence, though?
I did go up to one meeting after the strike was settled. I never forget that meeting. They opened the meeting with singing, and it was so beautiful that it made me cry, that song, whatever they were singing then. So the one time, and I heard this Etter, who was arrested, who was in jail, he had just come out. And
How about Girlie Flynn?
Girlie Flynn came to Boston with a friend of hers, Matilda Rabinovich, to speak for the wrinkled makers. You know, they, apparently some of the wrinkled makers decided they better go back to the AFL. They weren't progressing much. But they weren't increasing their membership. So they came to speak in there. And they were two beautiful girls. She was so handsome and so impressive, Girlie Flynn. Well, I had her book here, The History of Labor. Mm-hmm. And this girl from Laverne College was writing a paper on labor. And I knew this Margaret Preska, who sent her, as a student of hers, sent her to me to tell about labor. I gave her, actually, if you want to know the history of labor, I gave her the book, a Girl Flynn's book. You want it back? I said, well, I read it. I don't know. You can have it given to somebody else. So in that way, I knew what was going on by liking the people who were interested in it. And I would hear them speak. And it would be so much to my feeling, my thinking. I'd tag after them.
But yeah, it sounded like you were doing more than tagging. It sounded like you were doing some organizing yourself.
Well, I wouldn't call it organizing because I was not a speaker. Mm-hmm. I couldn't project what was in my mind and my heart.
But you would speak to individuals?
Individuals, yes. I would speak to them. And those that I knew, I wasn't a great deal of a mixer, too much of a loner. But that was my experience, is that getting the shop together. If I were a naval person, I might have gotten those people into the union. But I did get them over to the headquarters at their house, and we talked. It wasn't that I talked. We all talked together what should be done in order to get somewhere. You have to organize and be together.
But most of the Yiddish speaking women were very sympathetic to the union, weren't they?
They were both.
They were
sympathetic to the union, definitely. Definitely they were. But for instance, I had a neighbor who was secretary to a section mill, a weaving mill in Lowell, or one of the outside of Boston places. And she gave me an inkling of how they feel, the Native Americans, about union. She says, she showed me a chart, a round chart, she says that labor is the least expense of the whole business circle. And they can't afford to let labor win, because if they are Reds, they're foreigners, and they they can't get let them organize them to tell us what to do, you know. Like eat the locusts. And that's the way a lot of them felt about the union. But in there, the people in this country have gone a long way about union building, by belonging to union. Although some of them are still dissatisfied. They're dissatisfied with the social security system. They're kicking about, they have a lot of kicks. They don't understand what's hurting them. There's a lot of people like that.
So even though you were in the AFL union, most of your activities and interest and sympathies was really
my sympathy was with the IWW, because I heard them speak and I admire, and I was I liked what they said, in other words.
Now, how about you were living in Massachusetts all during the Sacco and Vanzetti case? Were you involved
in any of that? Yes, but that was the time when my children were small, and as I said, I lived far away, but from the city at that time. But certainly I felt terrible. My heart was aching for them. But as far as working, we supported, you know, when there was an appeal for money, we supported all we could. But I was never a worker in that so that explained my feeling to others. I never could. And I didn't have a large group of people around me because of my inability to project my feelings and thoughts. After a while, of course, we worked. During the Cold War, we worked a great deal of whatever we could do to talk to other people about the folly of the Cold War and all that.
What other groups did you join then after the Friends of the Soviet Union?
Well, but later I guess they organized this IWO, the International Fraternal Order Insurance Company, and we used to group together with that. You know, this was also it was composed of more or less workers, because it was cheap insurance, and some businessmen. A lot of businessmen joined, and it was very. And those were interesting groups, because there was a lot of intellectuals who joined this fraternal order. And in of course, it was broken up by the authorities. They thought we were too progressive. And they called us communists.
Mm. What year was this?
What year was this? It was.
Was that around the time of the Smith Act?
I think it was in the 30s, I would say, in the 30s. They had this a branch of it was the Jewish Fraternal Order, they called. So we used to get together, which was very nice people.
But after the period when you were involved at work and then with the IWW, you weren't involved in any labor organizations again after that?
No, I was, because I said I wasn't in the trade anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't even attend the union because I was too far away.
How about things like the International Labor Defense Group?
Oh, yes. While I was working, we were active. The girls were used to organize tea parties to raise a little money. The Labor Defense Committee, oh, yes, I forgot about that. Yeah, we used to have meetings sometimes. We'd only have a half an hour for lunch. And we'd somehow, in this little while, get together, see what could we do.
Were you usually the instigator?
I wouldn't say that, no. I was always a helper, but I was never an instigator.
Who would usually call the meeting?
Some of the girls who were active and able. But see, I was stupid, because this I'm not kidding. This girl came to me who was supposed to be a delegate to the Venus Trade League and didn't want to spend her time or her money. She came to me and proposed it to me, would I take her place for the week of the conference? And I was glad of the opportunity. Yes, I will, I said. Well, the union will pay you. I said, well, okay, you know. But I attended the conference and I had a wonderful time going with them to outings and things. But I never saw the union paying me. So she was a smart girl. And so some of these people were politicians. They knew what they were going after and what they were doing. Mm-hmm. But I was very stupid.
That conference was your first contact then?
And my first contact with the outside activities for labor, mm-hmm. for organizing the labor unions.
Do you remember the kinds of things that happened at the conference?
Well, it was during the McNamara Brothers trial.
Oh, so it was early, it was 1910?
Oh, no, it was in the 12th.
1912.
And there was such an argument for and against, you know, they're saying that they were framed, some of them. And another one stand up and say, well, we can't judge. The authorities know what they're doing, and they didn't believe they were really innocent. So there was all arguments about that. And then, of course, there was reports of the activities that what labor was doing and how they're succeeding here and failing there. But there's always some speeches on politics. We had morning sessions, afternoon sessions. And then there was outings and whatever. They had the banquets for the first meeting, and they have all sorts of activities. Well, that other girl was with them.
Mm.
But to attend the sessions, she didn't want to. Whether it was political, she didn't want to, or she didn't want to lose her job, whatever she was doing.
Well, did you take time off from your job?
I took time off from my job because I was glad of the opportunity. I never was crazy about the shop anyway. And so I lost out. The union didn't, she assumed that the union will pay you. She was acting in the union. Possibly, whatever her reason was for asking someone to sit in for her, I don't know.
Were there many shop girls at the conference, or was it mainly the There's
quite a few, a delegate.
Mm-hmm.
There was a delegate from New York. I remember this Pauline Newman, who was very active. Who else would I remember? That's about all, I guess, that I seem to remember the name very well. And it was very interesting to me. It was coming from a small town, and being ignorant of what's going around me. Not even ever seeing a newspaper as a child. So it was all new to me and I enjoyed it. I didn't care that I paid about it.
Because some women that I've talked to who were have somewhat bitter feelings about the women from the Women's Trade Union League, that they were rich women who didn't understand the shop.
I know their feeling, I know how they felt, because They're bloated with food and goods, and they're trying to be good to the underdog, to the others. Oh yeah, I've heard of a very bad behavior for the girls, factory girls, to those people when they came around. In fact, they reported, I don't remember where the report came from, that some of them got into open the car door and spit at them, which I thought was a terrible thing to do at that time. Although they're very angry, Same as we feel about the charitable institutions.
Mm-hmm.
Here you have some too. You have plenty.
Was it?
I know the feeling. But I didn't have that feeling to them because I saw them and I heard them. I don't know. It's just different.
Do you remember at the conference and the people giving speeches? Were any of them from the shop, or were they
most of them were these trade union league women, all of them. This Pauline Newman, I understand, maybe was a worker. I'm not sure. She had been a worker.
Dreyer and Robbins weren't.
And I know Dreyer and Robbins, and there was a third one, I've forgotten the name. They were always together.
Mm-hmm.
And they were the intellectuals and the wealthy people, yes, mm-hmm. and helping the workers.
Was there ever any talk about that conflict?
No, they didn't. But they did have this theme song that they would open the meeting with this: "Shall ye complain who feed the world, who clothe the world, who house the world?" And then they'd go on with this. I remember just this first words sung by the Tenenbaum.
Mm-hmm.
And they would go through and then they'd open the meeting. But at that time in Ireland, I was very, very ignorant. I didn't know, so I took it all in and I liked mm-hmm. what I heard.
I mean, because this was really your first exposure.
Right, that was my real first exposure away from my own, further from my nose.
Now, what was the name and number of your local?
I don't even remember that. Registration Dressmakers Union Locals. I don't remember the number of the local. There were some, you know, the girls were very active. Some were nice, and I liked what they were doing. And then there were some girls that I didn't like at all. I didn't think they behaved. I didn't think they were honest to the actual work that they were looking out for, number one.
Mm. Were the officers of the local women, or were they men?
Mostly women, I think. We had some men, because I remember going to try to sell tickets to a bazaar or a ball or a dance for our local. And there were men there.
Were the men working in your shop? As cutters and pressers?
Yeah, cutters and pressers, they were. They were all men, yeah.
But they were in their own locals? Like
well, the cutters had their own local, and I guess the pressers had their own local. And that's what allowed me out, why they weren't all in one union.
Mm-hmm.
Because I hadn't seen it, but the talk was that if the cutters were out on strike, well, the pressers were working, or the operators were out on strike, the finishers were working, or vice versa. So that's no union, united action.
When you went out on strike, was it a general strike, or did the cutters and pressers stay?
That I don't remember how general it was. I know that all I know was the girls worked, but I don't remember whether they went out or not. I know that some of our girls didn't go out, as I told you about Aunt Alice. And I remember this one. I believe it must have been in Malden, too, when I was working with the girls. So there's a couple of girls that I knew, I believe from Propaganda League, or I don't remember how I knew them. And they were working. And it was an open stairway to go up. It was in the summertime, it was hot. The door was wide open. So me, innocently, I go up the steps and said, "Gussie," I said, "we're on strike." She throws up her apron, and she's coming. And then the boss came along, and boy, did you ever throw it down the stairs. There's a couple of sisters that came up. So I was always, how they say, a fool boxing brains of fit a trend. That was me.
Did you, in your own shop, did you try and talk to them about industrial unions? Or you just tried to talk to them about
waste makers? Well, I was working. I didn't know so much about the industrial unionism. It was after I came to the other smaller place that I was more conscious of what was going on, because it was after the strike.
After the Lawrence strike?
After our own strike. I learned a little more about unionism and all that. And I knew one thing, that if we were out on strike, everyone should come over, but some of them didn't. I was very disappointed.
Well, Bessie, how many places did you work at before you then got married? You worked in the one shop.
I worked in the one shop, yeah. Okay. And then I worked in this other larger shop.
How big was the second shop?
I couldn't judge. There was quite a few of us, several tables. I couldn't really say. It was about 40 or 50 girls, probably.
How much did you make there?
We began at piecework. Now, work by the week, I don't remember even what I got, but we were working at piecework. And I know one thing, if I'd make $2 for the day, or $2.50, I quit. I'd go home. I'll find something else to do.
Well,
So I don't know.
You made fairly good money for that time period.
Well, the preacher said my week's pay would be $12 or $18.
But that was pretty good money.
It was pretty good money, yeah. That was over 1913,
mm-hmm.
I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we had slow girl. I took up another girl, a friend of mine that I liked very much. And she was so slow. Everybody was so disgusted with her. Mm-hmm. So in comparison to her, I was pretty fast. So anyway, I remember one week I had $18 pay. And I was walking with two other girls, all over their arms, and my pocket was big. Oh, boy, my $18 is gone.
What kind of hours did you work then?
Well, I guess we worked about 8 hours.
Uh-huh.
But I remember the songs I used to sing in Europe, the dream of working from 8 until 8. That's where the song was going.
And then the third, how long did you stay at that second shop? The second shop is the one where you had the strike.
The second shop.
Mm-hmm.
I was there quite a few years, maybe 2 or 3 years or something like that.
When did the strike happen? How long
ago? It must have been 1913
mm-hmm.
that the strike broke out.
How long were you out before it was settled?
Well, it was 6 weeks or 8 weeks,
mm-hmm.
quite a while. The details I don't remember.
But then, as a result of the strike, the shop was then organized.
Yeah, the shop was fairly well organized. Oh, whether the shop was organized, I don't know. But most of them belonged to the union, used to come to the union. Because,
mm-hmm.
as I said, we were mostly Jewish girls. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's any Italians that time or not.
So you were? Did you stay in that shop until you?
No, I didn't.
Quit to get married?
The third shop. I stayed, I guess, until we got married.
And was the third shop organized?
Well, we did have we all belonged to the union then, yes. But how well it was organized, what they were doing, I don't remember having a shop chairman or anything like that.
Now, when you went out to this town where the children's were,
yeah,
with the IWW, what shop were you working in at that time? Were you quit work altogether?
I quit during the strike.
Mm-hmm.
As I was out on strike. It was that time that they were trying to organize the mold
shop. Oh, I see.
Shop.
At the same time you were on
strike. Yeah. And instead of going back to work, I went with these girls. I don't know why, up to this day, why I went with them. Because my friends are telling me that it's a good thing that they belong to the IWW, and it's a good thing to start organizing.
So then when you went back to work, you returned to the same shop?
No, I didn't. I did not. What did I do? No, see, that was my other job. I had to find another job.
Oh, I see. So
I couldn't go back to
that
job. Yeah, that was my third one.
I see. Now, once you were married, you were interested in working, but your husband didn't want you to work?
No. At that time, you know, after a while, the child was probably about 16. Must have been 17 or 18. When I told you, I have to go to work because I'm making a lot of money, and it's easy work, skirts, at that time. So he says, well, if you go to work, I'll have to stay home.
It wasn't that
he wouldn't say don't go to, or anything like that. He says, I'll stay home if you go to work. So that was the name of the sleeping.
It wasn't that he objected to women working. It was
No, because of that child.
Mm-hmm.
He figured it's... He got responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
Either him or I should take care of the child.
You never considered letting him do it and you going to work?
No, not that.
What would have been wrong with that?
At that time, it didn't seem right because he was only making to earning $12 a week at that time. And his mother was with us. It wouldn't work.
Did you know anything about birth control?
Yes, I did, because when we were girls, we had this Dr. Konnikov, a woman doctor, and she was all for her. She went along with Margaret Sanger, and she furthered her ideas in our town, in our group, that is, I wouldn't say our town.
In the propaganda league?
No, that was a different project. That was her project.
Uh-huh.
And... Because they had her husband was a doctor, and she was a doctor, and most girls would go to her. So she organized this group, and she would lecture on birth control every once a week, and we girls would all go and listen to her.
What do you recall? What year this was?
Well, that probably was the same year as the 1913 about.
Uh-huh.
1913-14, I guess. Yeah, 1913-14, because that was the summer I went to my brother's to Canada for vacation after the strike and after all the hullabaloo was over. So,
What was her name?
Her name was Madame Konikol. I forget her first name. She was married to Dr. Konikol.
Hmm.
And she was very explicit, and she was very warning. She was saying that sometimes you don't even have to sleep with the man, but if you sleep in the same bed, the sperm will find itself to you. So I had this terrible dream that I was pregnant. And how could I explain to the doctor that I was never slept with a man? Oh, it was a excruciating dream. So that was her thing, was birth control, and how to control it and what to do.
Did she ever tell you about any devices?
No, I don't think. But I heard of devices from other women, married women.
What did they use?
They used the most pessaries,
mm-hmm.
mostly pessaries. I heard some other things. But me, I could never use anything. I was a little bit, my uterus was sort of out of place, or teeth or something. I couldn't hear that thing.
You went to the doctor for a pessary, though?
I went and I tried to use it and I couldn't. So I got pregnant more times than children. I wouldn't have anyone, no matter if I died at the beginning of the attempt.
Uh-huh.
I didn't.
So did you have abortions then?
Self-abortions.
You did it yourself?
Self-abortions, and then if I got into trouble, the doctor would help me.
How did you do it?
Oh, at various ways, you know. There are all kinds of things.
Because that's one of the things we're trying to explore more about, is how women did handle the problem.
Well, from one thing or the other, a woman was telling me about pills.
Mm-hmm.
So I got those pills, and I took them, and then...
Was that the Urgot pills?
I couldn't tell you what it was. It was some kind of black pill, and...
Where would you get it?
I don't remember how I got it either. I had a niece, a doctor, but I haven't been a niece, but she wouldn't give me anything. She was afraid. Anyhow, I got into trouble. I don't remember whether I was hemorrhaging or what it was. And I went to the doctor and I showed him the pills. Oh, he was terrified. Why? He said, I wonder you're alive. And I was, why don't you come to me? He says, you have your baby and I'll take it from you. He had no children. I'll take care of it. I said, doctor, if I have the baby, it's mine. He said, I didn't want any bring any more babies.
Was it just the one time, or did you have a couple of abortions?
Oh, I had three of them. I had a bad one that I was hemorrhaging years to death, and I called the doctor. He put me in the hospital, and the nurse said she couldn't understand how I went through it, how I didn't die. Only because you have European blood in you, she said.
How did you do that one?
Oh, you know, women talk. Some women, you make douches. You keep squirting water at the uterus. And finally it would open up. But if I get pregnant, it was just good to stay. So I nearly died with every one of them. But I was that damn determined.
Was just a water douche? Is all the...
I think it was just a warm water douche. I don't think I put anything in it.
Uh-huh.
And then my sister-in-law helped me, and I did that for a long, long time. And then, of course, I began hemorrhaging. So I called our family doctor, and he put me in the hospital and gave me a Kunar curettage. And it must have been some party, because later they said we had some party over there at the hospital. And the nurses say she's surprised, but I didn't die with it.
And then what, on the third occasion, what did you...
I what?
You said there were three times.
Well, the one summer we lived at the beach, and I carried on in the water. I did most everything in the water. And I don't remember whether I took anything. I think probably I took some Epsom salts, a lot of physics and all that. Well, finally, I began hemorrhaging, and then I had to have doctor's help to get out of it. But the third time I did it is also that I went to the same doctor to ask for help. It was later on. It was 1920, 1920 or something like that. My last baby was born in 23. Please, he says, have your baby, carry it out, and I'll gladly take it. I said, but my idea is I don't want to bring any more life. So this niece of mine, they did me a favor, and she sent me to a friend doctor of hers. And he performed like an abortion.
Mm-hmm. Wait, just in his office it was?
In his office, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you remember how much you had to pay?
That I don't remember. I don't begin to remember whether I had to pay him at all or not.
Oh.
I don't remember. I was complaining. Oh, it hurts. I said, oh, you want me to, you want the dam, don't you? I said, sure I do. So would it hurt?
So you weren't given anything at all?
No. No, he was probing it. He got out. So that was the last time. The last one. And then I removed and bought a house. So I removed and then I got busy and I got pregnant again. So that was my last, third baby. My first one we lost when he was only 43.
Oh.
He was a brilliant boy. He was a graduate MIT, a metallurgist, and was doing beautiful. He was lecturing at a college. He was lecturing for this welding society, American Welding Society. And he died suddenly of a heart attack.
Yeah.
The
women then really did talk among...
About birth control, definitely. Mm-hmm. In our class, yes.
Mm-hmm.
In the working class, people, there's a lot of self-helping each other going on. And different people use different devices.
What did you hear about usually?
They had a pecking. They talked about pecking. Well, I tried that. It didn't work.
But with cotton or what?
Apparently cotton. Apparently with cotton.
Because
as a matter of fact, most people had either one or two children in our generation.
Oh, so they really were doing something then?
Apparently, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Just after the war, I guess, people decided to have as many as practical bear.
Because one of the things that we are finding out, everyone assumes that women in those days did not know very much about birth control. But
well,
we're finding out that by and large, they knew a lot more than people think, and they shared the information with each other.
Definitely. Let me tell you that even prior to the time I came to this country, I used to hear the women talk about self-abortions, because they could see, you know, people with an intelligence, that anyone who has a large family is having a hard time.
Mm-hmm.
If they could afford to feed one or two, but they have to feed seven or eight, it's just as impossible. Everyone suffers.
Did you know of cases where, well, we've come across a couple of cases of women who would actually insert a needle?
No, that I didn't
or
know.
Or a coat hanger, that sort of thing. You never heard of people doing that?
I never heard, but... I did, as you say, you heard about people doing that. Maybe I heard about it.
Yeah.
But that's too horrible. That's certain death, I think.
Yeah. But the idea of the packing was that the packing would expand?
Well, the idea was that the sperm wouldn't penetrate the uterus.
Oh, they would use it as a contraceptive?
As a contraceptive, yeah.
Like a sponge? But,
maybe it was... they told me they didn't go into detail, but packing, so I think it must be cotton batten or perhaps cotton wrapped in cheesecloth or something like that. But I tried.
You did try it then?
Yeah. I know this friend of mine who was older than I was, had children. It's so simple, she said. Oh, you do such and such. And I said, well, I could never do anything, so I risked my life and it started.
Because there were, until the pessary caught on, very often women would use a sponge. And then I think the skin of the sponge would expand.
It would
a little
expand.
Bit.
But well,
that's
another thing. And another thing that I used to hear women say is a douche right after. So I tried that, the douching. Of course, my husband was helpful. So, his abortion, he would say, well, it's your body, your life, you have to do what you think.
That was sort of an unusual attitude, wasn't it?
It was unusual, because most men would say, oh no, don't, I wouldn't have you risk your life, something like that. But he was not a dictator. So it's your body, you're in danger with birth, you're in danger with this. You have to decide.
But so each time you had to end up ultimately going to a doctor.
I had to, yes. Yeah, because it would dribble and dribble. Oh, I did a lot of damage to myself. There's no doubt about it. No doubt about it.
But had you ever gone to a doctor and asked them to do an abortion and they turned you down?
They wouldn't do it. This doctor was very, very nice in Boston. He was a friend of my niece's, and he was very good, but he wouldn't do a thing. No help to abortion. He pointed out how dangerous it was what I was doing, but he wouldn't do anything.
Hmm. It seems that so many of the people who would do abortions, the doctors, were usually women doctors, I found.
Oh, the doctors themselves?
And they were women, though, who were the ones who would give other women the abortions.
Oh, yeah, yeah, they want the women doctors, of course. Yeah, that's true. But this, by the time I was having this difficulty, this woman was dead already.
Oh.
And Mrs. Conico was dead. I think she died or she moved away, I don't quite remember. She was certainly a beautiful woman. And he, her husband, wouldn't do a thing for in that direction, not a thing.
Oh, really? It's just as a woman she understood and was...
I suppose, yeah, but he would... In the first place, it was too dangerous. They took a great chance if they helped a woman. If anything went wrong, why, there would be a suit. So we did that. I wasn't the only one that did self-abortion, so a great many did. Because how come they would have only one child or two children?
But it was something that was fairly freely talked about among us,
yeah, in our circle we talked freely about it. In fact, before we were married, when we were girls, we talked about it very freely. It was very easy to talk about because it was because we were concerned about it. Naturally, we talk about it.
Is there anything else that you think would be helpful for me to know? Because what I probably will want to do is do a little bit of research on that, the strike.
Oh, yeah.
And then come back and talk to you more about it. Is there anything else that you think you can add?
I don't think so. Those experiences I remember was especially what touched me was that experience of putting me out to speak for the IWW before the girls, because while I was conducting, I wasn't conducting, I was helping those people in Nolan to encourage them. I guess they, somehow or other, they had confidence in me, I don't know why. Some people came, a committee came to talk to me to try and get the girls back to the AFL. They would never have a union, it wasn't back, but to join the AFL because it was impractical, and it's breaking up the union. Instead of uniting, you're just drifting away. And I just didn't see it that way. I said, well, the girls, we feel that they want to belong to the IWW, which is a better, stronger union eventually. And of course, I couldn't tell the girls what to do. It's their decision.
Mm-hmm.
Well, some of the union, the girls, and they had this young man who was very much interested in the unionism, who came with them. And they were cool to me after that, you know. I lost them as friends.
Oh.
But there wasn't anything, I didn't have it initiated myself. It's just what seemed to me that is correct, so I did it.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully that it would eventually do become a strong union. I didn't realize that it was being broken up even then.
Well, you must have been under considerable pressure, though, since you yourself were in an AFL union, but you were...
I was in the union, yes, but because it was our union, mm-hmm. and paid the dues, I was working, and I felt that I belonged to them. But at the same time, I felt that there should be a way of building the IWW, which they finally did, but not in this same way, not in our way. Not the way we taught, you know. It became a political, politicized thing, and they went entirely against my own feelings about this whole anti Soviet and anti-IWW, and they were hurting those who were organizing IWW, breaking them up mercilessly.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't devoted to them at all. In fact, when I came to this country, to New York, I was just a greenhorn, and they talked Yiddish, so I understood what they were saying. There was a family of workers who were working in the clothing trade. And they were speaking of, one of them especially was speaking of the, privately, of the corruption of the AFL unions. At that time, they spoke of Gompers, they spoke of whoever was next to Gompers, I remember. So it roused me that I never had confidence. From the very beginning, I wasn't enthused about this union.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a union, and we stuck under them, and so we belonged. That's all we stood. Paid our dues.
Who were the key IWW people who would come and speak when you were out in that town? Were some of the IWW organizers like New York coming out, like Tresca and Jovanov?
Well, there was one young man who was telling that his brother, the same name in New York, is for the AFL. And he's completely opposed to that. That's why he came out to help the Molden girls.
Uh-uh.
Yeah, he was helping. I don't remember. He didn't stay in the hall like I said that all day long.
Uh-huh.
I don't remember what his capacity was, but he came to me once and said, ask whether any of the girls want to quit the strike. I said, I don't know, I haven't heard of any. Well, you tell them, he says, any of them were going to quit the strike, I'll break their bones. I said, well, you tell them that yourself.
How many of them were there? Of the girls, were there?
There must have been about 30 or 40, probably.
Mm-hmm.
They collected them, but they had a treasure by the time the strike was settled. The rabbi had gone with them, and they settled the strike for a very pittance, like ½ cent or something. But I said, as long as you're together, someday you'll get more if you stick together.
Mm-hmm.
So they accumulated treasure of $75. But I used to come after that strike to their meetings, travel from Washington Morton. This one time I come to this house where the treasurer, one of the girls' treasurer, she's got a big figure on her head, crying, they stole the treasury. They broke and stole the treasury. I was so disappointed after that, all that hard work, it's a quarter, it's accumulated. They stole the treasury. Well, I didn't come to those meetings anymore. I was too hurt.
Now, did they eventually join the AFL, though they didn't stay with
them? I really don't remember. As time goes on, I don't remember whether they stuck to the union or whether they joined the AFL. I was the girl that used to go to sleep over with. They moved away. They were in a different town.
Oh.
And somehow I lost track of them. But they sure... But they sure came to the hall every day, to report that they are here.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go to picket line. I figured they'd better run without me on the picket line.
But you, during the Patterson strike, you didn't go to Patterson.
No.
You wouldn't go other places outside of your own.
Oh, no. I heard about it because this Matilda Rabinowitz was at the Patterson strike.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe Gerla Freen was there, too, because she reported on it.
Mm-hmm.
They talked about it.
Do you know, did this Matilda Rabinowitz, did she have red hair by any chance?
No. Mm-hmm. Somebody else told me that after the Soviet Revolution, that union there, she got sour. She soured on the whole thing,
uh-huh.
This Matilda. But she was a friend. She went around with Curly, and Curly stuck to her convictions,
mm-hmm.
to the last.
Because I'm just trying to think, I've got someone tell me about someone named Matilda Rosen, if that could be her, if she changed her name.
No, it might have been. I don't remember her having red hair, though.
Mm-hmm.
I call her Rabinowitz, Matilda Rabinowitz.